Glad to have you back for our study of Chapter 27 in the Life Divine, the Gnostic Being. Describing the nature of the Gnostic individual as at once a power of the freedom of infinity and a power of the right expression of the truth force, so that both law and freedom come into one compass in this awakened individual, expressive only of truth, with a system personally that's entirely in accord with itself, that all the elements work in harmony, that reaches out and finds harmony with all that surrounds in the community, in the world, in the nature about. This is the nature of the Gnostic individual. And he continues for some time to write about this freedom and law expressive of the supernature in a way that makes it more vivid to us. So we take it up here. In the supramental Gnostic nature, there will therefore be no need of the mental rigid way and hard style of order, a limiting standardization, an imposition of a fixed set of principles, the compulsion of life into one system or pattern which is alone valid because it is envisaged by mind as the one right truth of being and conduct. For such a standard cannot include, and such a structure cannot take up into itself, the whole of life, nor can it adapt itself freely to the pressure of the all life or to the needs of the evolutionary force. It has to escape from itself, or to escape from its well-constructed limits, by its own death, by disintegration, or by an intense conflict and revolutionary disturbance. Mind has thus to select its limited rule and way of life, because it is itself bound and limited in vision and capacity. But Gnostic being takes up into itself the whole of life and existence, fulfilled, transmuted into the harmonic self-expression of a vast truth, one and diverse, infinitely one, infinitely multiple. The knowledge and action of the Gnostic being would have the wideness and plasticity of an infinite freedom. This knowledge would grasp its objects as it went in the largeness of the whole. It would be bound only by the integral truth of the whole and the complete and inmost truth of the object, but not by the formed idea or fixed mental symbols by which the mind is caught and held and confined in them so as to lose the freedom of its knowledge. The entire activity also would be unbound by an obligation of unelastic rule, or by the obligation of a past state or action, or by its compelling consequence, karma. It would have the sequent but self-guided and self-evolving plasticity of the infinite acting directly upon its own finites. This movement will not create a flux or chaos, but a liberated and harmonic truth expression. There would be a free self-determination of the spiritual being in a plastic, entirely conscious nature. You can see here the reality of what he's described as Ritta Chit, the truth-conscious, active dynamic of the supramental consciousness would have taken entire possession of the vehicle. And so it would be free of determinations except what is naturally self-determined by its own force of reality. Nothing is imposed on it. Nothing is imposed upon it by an external nature. It is the self nature that governs it. So knowledge and force, again, part of one compass, and we'll see how much farther that goes momentarily. In the consciousness of the infinite, individuality does not break up nor circumscribe cosmicity. Cosmicity does not contradict transcendence. So the three great terms of being, if there is an unknowable, if there is an indefinable reality, still, we can gauge it in this way, that it has three terms of itself as it comes into being. It is a transcendence, beyond any definition, beyond the limits of all space and time, yet it is also cosmic in its self-extension, and it is also individual in expression. And all three are coexistent. The individual exists in the cosmos, the individual exists in the transcendence. The transcendence is self-stationed in the cosmos and self-stationed in the individual. The universe is impossible except as a derivation and expression of the transcendence, and is incomplete and unfulfilled if it does not have the individual through which to explore and discover itself. So these are three interrelated, absolutely essential terms of being: individual, universe, transcendence. The Gnostic being, living in the consciousness of the infinite, will create his own self-manifestation as an individual. But he will do so as a center of a larger universality and yet at the same time a center of the transcendence. So the freedom and the power of one who is in this Gnostic supramental consciousness means that it is a self-determined individuality, but always expressive and contextualized in the universe and derived directly from the transcendence, not as a guess, but as an innate knowledge. A universal individual, all his action would be in harmony with the cosmic action, but owing to his transcendence, it would not be limited by a temporary inferior formulation or at the mercy of any or every cosmic force. His universality would embrace even the ignorance around him in its larger self, but while intimately aware of it, he would not be affected by it. He would follow the greater law of his transcendent individuality and express its Gnostic truth in his own way of being and action. His life would be a free harmonic expression of the self. But since his highest self would be one with the being of the Ishvara, a natural divine government of his self-expression by the Ishvara, by his highest self, and by the supernature, his own supreme nature, would automatically bring into the knowledge, the life, the action, a large and unbound but perfect order. So Ishvara, the Supreme Lord, also can be called the Purushottama of the Gita, the Supreme Person, whose nature, a supernature, a supreme nature, paraprakriti, is one with his own, and yet we also, as individual expressions, in deep identity with that, express the will and the force of Ishvara also when we awaken to that. So, then there is this balance in expressive power in life, in deep knowledge, and in the satisfaction that it brings to be so expressed and manifest. All the ingredients, all the determinations that abound in that supreme consciousness. And there is freedom, and there is self-determined law. They are not contradictory. The individual nature, he writes, would be nothing separate. It would be a current of the supernature. All antinomy of the Purusha and the Prakriti, that curious division and unbalance of the soul and nature which afflicts the ignorance, would be entirely removed. For the nature would be the outflowing of the self-force of the person, and the person would be the outflowing of the supreme nature, the supramental power of being of the Ishvara. It is this supreme truth of his being, an infinitely harmonic principle, that would create the order of his spiritual freedom, an authentic, automatic, and plastic order. So we're speaking here about the fulfilling aspect of the supramental consciousness as it determines its own form and fashions its own life and fulfills its own aims throughout the entirety of its being. There is oneness between the consciousness and the express power of that consciousness. Chit and Shakti have been reunited in that conscious being. And he speaks here about the antinomy of Purusha Prakriti, but remember in chapters past, he has talked about how an important discovery of the Purusha distinguished from the Prakriti can lead us to an initial insight that gives us a spiritual freedom from the slavery to obvious nature. And when we can live authentically in the freedom of that conscious person, then eventually we can recover a sort of sovereignty over nature. But the first thing is to be able to distinguish Purusha from Prakriti. So that is an evolutionary necessity and part of what comes with the mentalization of the evolutionary force. But here we're speaking about the supramentalization. We no longer need that division, that dualism, to gain individual freedom from nature. Here we're trying to unite the two, and they come back into gathered oneness in the supramental consciousness. In the lower existence, the order is automatic, the binding of nature complete, her groove firm and imperative. The cosmic consciousness force evolves a pattern of nature and its habitual mold or fixed round of action, and obliges the infrarational being to live and act according to the pattern and in the mold or round made for it. So this is the consciousness force, the chit shakti, operating at the level of ordinary nature as we meet it, at prakriti. This is not supernature, para prakriti. Mind in man starts with this prearranged pattern and routine. But as it evolves, it enlarges the design and expands the mold and tries to replace this fixed, unconscious, or half-conscious law of automatism by an order based on ideas and significances and accepted life motives, or it attempts an intelligent standardization and a framework determined by rational purpose, utility, and convenience. There is nothing really binding or permanent in man's knowledge structures or his life structures. But still, he cannot but create standards of thought, knowledge, personality, life, conduct, and more or less consciously and completely base his existence on them, or at least try his best to frame his life in the ideative cadre of his chosen or accepted dharmas. This is the way we tend to approach existence. We decide what is right, what is wrong. This patch of nature before us is good and real, and that patch over there is obscure and possibly bad. In the passage, he says, to the spiritual life, the supreme ideal held up is, on the contrary, not law, but liberty in the spirit. The spirit breaks through all formulas to find itself, and if it has still to be concerned with expression, it must arrive at the liberty of a free and true instead of an artificial expression, a true and spontaneous spiritual order. So to get beyond the limitations of these mind-made philosophies and dharmas and ethical standards, we have to break, we have to throw them away, we have to liberate ourselves. And so finally, we come to the wonderful expression in Bhagavad Gita, the 18th chapter, the 66th verse. Abandon all dharmas, all standards and rules of being and action, and take refuge in me alone. Is the summit rule of the highest existence held up by the divine being to the seeker? In the seeking for this freedom, in the liberation from constructed law into law of self and spirit, in the casting away of the mental control in order to substitute for it the control of the spiritual reality, an abandonment of the lower constructed truth of mind for the higher essential truth of being, it is possible to pass through a stage in which there is an inner freedom, but a lack of outer order, an action in the flux of nature, childlike or inert like a leaf lying passive or driven by the wind, or even incoherent or extravagant in outer semblance. You'll remember in the Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo describes how persons who were liberated may behave like the child run amok, balavat, etc. Various styles of behavior which have a spiritual realization behind them, but the outer nature is untransformed, ungoverned, and just does as it wishes. And yet we look upon that and they say, yes, still, even though it seems licentious, there is still spiritual liberty behind it. And yet, to the supramental consciousness, that would be awkward and embarrassment, because it would mean that the consciousness had no control to harmonize the nature. It is a phase through which the spirit, liberating itself from engrossment in nature, could pass and will pass, but it goes beyond. He continues, it is possible also to arrive at a temporary, ordered spiritual expression of the self, which is sufficient for the stage one can reach for a time or in this life, where it may be a personal order of self-expression valid according to the norm of what one has already realized of the spiritual truth, but afterwards changing freely by the force of spirituality to express the yet larger truth that one goes on to realize. But the supramental Gnostic being stands in a consciousness in which knowledge is self-existent and manifests itself according to the order self-determined by the will of the infinite in the supernature. This self-determination, according to a self-existent knowledge, replaces the automatism of nature and the standards of mind by the spontaneity of a truth self-aware and self-active in the very grain of the existence. So we see, brought down into the grossest workings of nature in the supramentalized consciousness, the powers that are one in Satchit Ananda. Chit, which is instinct with Shakti, expressed as knowledge, Chit, and as power, the force of will, Shakti, automatically balanced, harmonious in the supramental consciousness, so that in the expression of ordered being, it is the expression of freedom. In the Gnostic being, this self-determining knowledge, freely obedient to self-truth and the total truth of being, would be the very law of his existence. In him, knowledge and will become one and cannot be in conflict. Truth of spirit and life become one and cannot be at variance. In the self-effectuation of his being, there can be no strife or disparity or divergence between the spirit and the members. The two principles of freedom and order, which in mind and life are constantly representing themselves as contraries or incompatibles, though they have no need to be that if freedom is guarded by knowledge and order based upon truth of being, are, in the supermind, consciousness native to each other and even fundamentally one. This is so because both are inseparable aspects of the inner spiritual truth, and therefore their determinations are one. They are inherent in each other, for they arise from an identity and therefore in action coincide in a natural identity. The Gnostic being does not in any way or degree feel his liberty infringed by the imperative order of his thought or actions, because that order is intrinsic and spontaneous. He feels both his liberty and the order of his liberty to be one truth of his being. His liberty of knowledge is not a freedom to follow falsehood or error, for he does not need, like the mind, to pass through the possibility of error in order to know. On the contrary, any such deviation would be a departure from his plenitude of the Gnostic self. It would be a diminution of his self-truth and alien and injurious to his being, for his freedom is a freedom of light, not of darkness. His liberty of action is not a license to act upon wrong will or the impulsions of the ignorance, for that too would be alien to his being, a restriction and diminution of it, not a liberation. A drive for fulfillment of falsehood or wrong will would be felt by him not as a movement towards freedom, but as a violence done to the liberty of the spirit, an invasion and imposition, an inroad upon his supernature, a tyranny of some alien nature. A supramental consciousness must be fundamentally a truth consciousness, a direct and inherent awareness of the truth of being and the truth of things. It is a power of the infinite, knowing and working out its finites, a power of the universal, knowing and working out its oneness and detail, its cosmicity and its individualities. Self-possessed of truth, it would not have to seek for the truth or suffer from the liability to miss it, as does the mind of the ignorance. The evolved Gnostic being would have entered into this truth consciousness of the infinite and universal, and it would be that which would determine for him and in him all his individual seeing and action. His would be a consciousness of universal identity and a consequent or rather inherent truth knowledge, truth sight, truth feeling, truth will, truth sense, and truth dynamis of action implicit in his identity with the One, or spontaneously arising from his identity with the All. His life would be a movement in the steps of a spiritual liberty and largeness, replacing the law of the mental idea and the law of vital and physical need and desire and the compulsion of a surrounding life. His life and action would be bound by nothing else than the divine wisdom and will acting on him and in him according to its truth consciousness. An absence of an imposed construction of law might be expected to lead in the life of the human ignorance, because of the separativeness of the human ego and its smallness, the necessity it feels to impinge on and possess and utilize other life, to a chaos of conflict, license, and egoistic disorder. But this could not exist in the life of the Gnostic being. For in the Gnostic truth consciousness of a supramental being, there must necessarily be a truth of relation of all the parts and movements of the being, whether the being of the individual or the being of any Gnostic collectivity, a spontaneous and luminous oneness and wholeness in all the movements of the consciousness and all the action of the life. There could be no strife of the members, for not only the knowledge and will consciousness, but the heart consciousness and life consciousness and body consciousness, what are in us, the emotional, vital, or physical parts of nature, would be included in this integrated harmony of wholeness and oneness. In our language, we might say that the supermind knowledge will of the Gnostic being would have a perfect control of the mind, heart, life, and body. But this description could apply only to the transitional stage when the supernature was remolding these members into its own nature. Once that transition was concluded, there would be no need of control, for all would be one unified consciousness, and therefore would act as a whole in a spontaneous integrality and unity. So this is a magnificent picture, isn't it, of an individual fully aware of the truth consciousness, responsive, receptive to its vibration, to its manifestation in all the parts of his awakened nature, because there is no darkness anymore, and expressed in terms of truth, in terms of life, in terms of auspicious form, significant form that translates the truth and beauty of the sublime into actualities upon earth. And not just in the awakened individual, but in concert with all nature around, but especially in vibrance with the community of souls which share that consciousness and that nature of being. So Sri Aurobindo is seeing the perfections of the supramental consciousness establish itself upon earth in an awakened individual, in an awakened collectivity, so that society expresses the all. The individual expresses the all. And both, in harmonic balance with each other, express too the transcendence that has still more riches to pour upon the manifestation, which are unknown, which are the mystery yet to come, even tomorrow. A spontaneous integrality and unity. So, when first the supramental consciousness manifests, there may be a need to exercise a direct government of the members of one's own elemental unit or of the Gnostic society, and yet with time the behavior becomes automatically, because it is self-regulated by truth. Ritta Chit has established itself all the way to the material base. So he continues then, in a Gnostic being, there could be no conflict between self-affirmation of the ego and a control by superego. For since in his action of life, the Gnostic individual would at once express himself, his truth of being, and work out the divine will, since he would know the divine as his true self and the source and constituent of his spiritual individuality, these two springs of his conduct would not only be simultaneous in a single action, but they would be one and the same motor force. Sri Aurobindo is playing a little bit here with Freudian psychology, which was popular during the day in the late 30s and early 40s. As if this distinction between id, ego, and superego would be determinative of what is human nature. Sri Aurobindo scotches that with this paragraph. This motive power would act in each circumstance according to the truth of the circumstance, with each being according to its need, nature, relation, and each event according to the demand of the divine will upon that event. For all here is the result of a complexus and a close nexus of many forces of one force, and the Gnostic consciousness and truth will would see the truth of these forces, of each and of all together, and put forth the necessary impact or intervention on the complex of forces to carry out what was willed to be done through itself, that and no more. Complexus would be an entity composed of many parts, and the nexus would be the linked group. So you see all the parts described in the complexus, and then the linking, the synthesis of them in the group, in the nexus. In consequence of the identity present everywhere, ruling everything and harmonizing all diversities, there would be no play of a separative ego bent on its own separate self-affirmation. The will of the self of the Gnostic being would be one with the will of the Ishvara. It would not be a separative or contrary self-will, because the individual is part of the transcendence expressed as a universal reality, and so in harmony with the need of the moment in the context given. It would have the joy of action and result, but would be free from all ego claim, attachment to action, or demand of result. It would do what it saw had to be done and was moved to do. In mental nature, there can be an opposition or disparity between self-effort and obedience to the higher will, for there, the self or apparent person sees itself as different from the supreme being, will, or person. But here, the person is being of the being, and the opposition or disparity does not arise. The action of the person is the action of the Ishvara in the person, of the one in the many. And there can be no reason for a separative assertion of self-will or pride of independence. The fiction of a separate self does not exist. On this fact, that the divine knowledge and force, the supreme supernature, would act through the Gnostic being with his full participation, is founded the freedom of the Gnostic being. It is this unity that gives him his liberty. The freedom from law, including the moral law, so frequently affirmed of the spiritual being, is founded on this unity of its will with the will of the eternal. All the mental standards would disappear because all necessity for them would cease. The higher authentic law of identity with the divine self and identity with all beings would have replaced them. There would be no question of selfishness or altruism, of one self and others, since all are seen and felt as the one self, and only what the supreme truth and good decided would be done. There would be, in the action, a pervasive feeling of a self-existent, universal love, sympathy, oneness. But the feeling would penetrate, color, and move in the act, not solely dominate or determine it. It would not stand for itself in opposition to the larger truth of things or dictate a personally impelled departure from the divinely willed true movement. This opposition and departure can happen in the ignorance where love or any other strong principle of the nature can be divorced from wisdom, even as it can be divorced from power. But in the supermind gnosis, all powers are intimate to each other and act as one. Knowledge, power, delight are not separable. Satchit Ananda is perfectly and diversely expressed in the supermental consciousness. There is no division. There is diversity. But oneness is never abrogated. In the Gnostic person, the truth knowledge would lead and determine, and all the other forces of the being concur in the action. There would be no place for disharmony or conflict between the powers of the nature. In all action, there is an imperative existence that seeks to be fulfilled. A truth of being not yet manifested has to be manifested, or a truth manifesting has to be evolved and achieved and perfected in manifestation, or if already achieved, to take its delight of being and self-effectuation. In the half-light and half-power of the ignorance, the imperative is secret, or only half-revealed, and the push to fulfillment is an imperfect, struggling, partly frustrated movement. But in the Gnostic being and life, the imperatives of being would be felt within, intimately perceived and brought into action. There would be a free play of their possibilities. There would be an actualization in accordance with the truth of circumstance and the intention in the supernature. All this would be seen in the knowledge and develop itself in act. There would be no uncertain combat or torment of forces at work, a disharmony of the being, a contradictory working of the consciousness could have no place. The imposition of an external standardization of mechanized law would be entirely superfluous where there is this inherence of truth and its spontaneous working in act of nature. A harmonic action, a working out of the divine motive, an execution of the imperative truth of things, would be the law and natural dynamics of the whole existence. I think that is a grand vision and a wonderful place to put our bookmark for this week. Next week, we aspire to bring to completion our reading of this chapter, The Gnostic Being. Here's a selection from Savitri. In Book 2, The Book of the Traveler of the Worlds, Canto 11, Kingdoms and Godheads of the Greater Mind. In a sublimer and more daring soar to the wide summit of the triple stairs, bare steps climbed up like flaming rocks of gold, burning their way to a pure absolute sky. August and few, the sovereign kings of thought, have made of space their wide, all-seeing gaze, surveying the enormous work of time. A breath of all-containing consciousness supported being in a still embrace. Intercessors with a luminous unseen, they capped in the long passage to the world the imperatives of the Creator Self, obeyed by unknowing earth, by conscious heaven. Their thoughts are partners in its vast control. A great all-ruling consciousness is there, and mind unwitting serves a higher power. It is a channel, not the source of all. The cosmos is no accident in time. There is a meaning in each play of chance. There is a freedom in each face of fate. A wisdom knows and guides the mysteried world. A truth gaze shapes its beings and events. A word self-born upon creation's heights, voice of the eternal in the temporal spheres, prophet of the seeings of the absolute, sows the idea's significance in form, and from that seed the growths of time arise. On peaks beyond our ken, the all-wisdom sits. A single and infallible look comes down. A silent touch from the supernal's air awakes to ignorant knowledge in its acts the secret power in the inconscient depths, compelling the blinded Godhead to emerge, determining necessity's new dance as she passes through the circuit of the hours and vanishes from the chase of finite eyes down circling vistas of aeonic time. The unseizable forces of the cosmic whirl bear in their bacchant limbs the fixity of an original foresight that is fate. Even nature's ignorance is truth's instrument. Our struggling ego cannot change her course. Yet is it a conscious power that moves in us. A seed idea is parent of our acts, and destiny the unrecognized child of will. Infallibly, by truth's directing gaze, All creatures here their secret self disclose, forced to become what in themselves they hide. For he who is grows manifest in the years, and the slow Godhead shut within the cell climbs from the plasm to immortality. Namaste. Jai Ma.